Trio Sonata by George Friedrich Handel. That was the Academy Chamber Ensemble performing. Nothing like those just simple two violins over an accompaniment.
This is WHFR Dearborn, beautiful classical programming presented to you each and every day right here on our non-commercial independent station, WHFR. We've got so many other exciting activities and events that we'd love to share with you. We would welcome you to become part of our WHFR loyal listener group. Simply give me a call, Susan McGraw, WHFR General Manager, at 313-845-9842, and I will be happy to put you on our free WHFR mailing list. Again, the telephone number is 313-845-9842. If you have comments, suggestions, requests, and anything of that nature, additionally, you might like to call me and let's chat about it. We're always open to new ideas and love to hear feedback of what you're enjoying here at WHFR and also ways that we might improve to bring this beautiful music your way. So don't hesitate to call me today. Love to hear from you, and we're very thankful that you're a part of our WHFR loyal listeners.
Good morning, this is Lynn, and I'm bringing you the fourth Saturday of the month forum show, and this is called Basic Concepts of Music. This is a telecourse. It's music appreciation produced by the Annenberg CPB grant, featuring nationally known music educators, prominent music artists, and many music examples from a wide variety of music periods and styles. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. That's the forum show today on WHFR Dearborn, and it'll come to you in two sections, approximately one half hour each. Stay tuned for that right after these important messages.
Halloween is that rarest of times when the villain steals the limelight. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we give you our Halloween guest of honor.
Hello, I'm DJ Bam, here with some important Halloween safety tips. With witches, goblins, and superheroes descending on neighborhoods across America, the American Red Cross, along with WHFR, would like to offer parents some safety tips to help prepare their children for a safe and enjoyable trick-or-treat holiday. Remind your children to always walk on sidewalks, not in the street. Look both ways before crossing the street to check for cars, trucks, and low-flying brooms. Cross the street only at corners and don't hide behind or cross the street between parked cars. Wear light-colored or reflective-type clothing so you and your children are more visible. Always inspect your child's treats before letting them eat any candy, and don't let kids eat candy if the package is already opened. These and other Halloween safety tips are available online for your family to review on the WHFR message forum on our website, www.whfr.fm. To make today even more special, call WHFR on Halloween, and you will instantly receive one of our special trick-or-treat bags of goodies. Everyone who calls and gets through on the WHFR phone lines on October 31st will get one of our special bags. Remember to say trick or treat when we answer. Our phone numbers are 313-845-9676 or 1-800-585-4322, extension 9676. All of us here at WHFR wish you and your family a safe and happy Halloween.
Hi, I'm David Twitchell, bringing the cable TV show We Are Not Alone right here to WHFR 89.3 FM. Join us the first Saturday of each month from 10 to 11 a.m. when local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. So whether you're a believer, a skeptic, or have ever wondered if we are alone in the universe, I guarantee you will find the conversations fascinating and thought-provoking. That's the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. We are not alone, and the evidence is right here on WHFR.
Basic Concepts of Music, an audio print series funded by the Annenberg CPB Project. Professor Paul Hack of the University of Minnesota and Professor J. Peter Burkholder of Indiana University host this program on Melody.
That melody is from Africa. This is a Jewish call to prayer. And here is a melody from Azerbaijan in the Soviet Union. These melodies we've been hearing all have words, but some melodies don't have words. Sometimes we hear several melodies all at the same time. Sometimes one melody can be shared by many instruments. Melodies can be improvised, made up on the spot, or they can be carefully written down by a composer. They can even be determined by the flip of a coin or by chance, as in The Music of Changes by John Cage. Most music and most melodies are created not by chance, of course, but by choice. The composer or the performer chooses a series of notes that becomes the melody. What are the ingredients, the codes we use to define melody? That's the topic of this program. Music is a kind of language. It communicates. And like language, it has a system of rules and conventions for sending its messages. The basic tools for language are words, but communicating is much more than words. Think about a lively conversation you had recently, or one you heard. How much of the communicating was done with words, and how much was done with facial expressions, hand gestures, body language? How fast or slow did you speak? How high or low was your voice? How much emotion accompanied the words? We're going to raise similar questions as we explore melody and how tones or pitches are organized to communicate through music. Professor Paul Hack begins with some musical analogies to such spoken terms as statements, themes, and questions and answers.
Let's listen to a statement of the first theme of the first movement of Beethoven's Eighth Symphony. Now, that particular statement was made up of three phrases. That is, you might have heard a couple of commas there before we reached a period, or a point of rest and resolution. That phrase leaves us up in the air, unsettled, and Beethoven responds with... But we're not quite at the end of the complete thought yet. It's still left a bit unsettled. And Beethoven responds again with... And there we have that feeling of finality that comes with a period at the end of a sentence.
So now we're ready for some definitions of melody. The Westrop and Harrison Encyclopedia of Music says simply, melody is a succession of single musical sounds. Victor Zuckerkandel, in his book Sound and Symbol, tells us that melody is not just a series of tones, but a series of tones that make sense. Remember the Music of Changes by John Cage that we heard earlier? To many people, this particular series of tones is not a melody because it makes no sense to them. Like a series of words without subject or verb, it is not a sentence. It conveys no thought. No meaning to them.
To push the language analogy a bit further, in language or verbal communication, we use alphabet letters which can be likened to pitched sounds. In fact, we name our musical pitches by letters of the alphabet. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and then again A, B, C, and so on. Usually, words contain several letters, and motives contain several pitched sounds.
The Harvard Dictionary of Music defines a motive as the briefest, intelligible, and self-contained fragment of a musical theme.
For example, the first three tones of the first theme of Mozart's 40th symphony . In spoken language, we have a group of words called a phrase, which can be likened to a musical phrase.
And we could say a phrase of music, a musical phrase, is a natural division of a melodic line, but one which does not in and of itself necessarily result in a feeling of even momentary completeness.
Kind of leaves us up in the air, unsettled. Moved, but not arrived.
And this brings us to another analogy with language, the idea of a question and answer. If we have a phrase that kind of leaves us up in the air, and it's followed by a phrase that brings us back down again, that's like a question followed by an answer. And when a questioning phrase is followed by an answering phrase, it's called a musical period. Sometimes we speak of an antecedent phrase and a consequent phrase, or a tension-arousing phrase and a tension-relaxing phrase.
So just as a simple sentence or a question-response provides a complete thought, a musical period provides a comprehensive, expressive unit of melody. So now let's use a simple tune, a little folk tune such as Lightly Row, to review several of these terms. As we think of the tune, we might note that the first three tones are like a motif. A short, and a long tone. Short, short, long. A motive that appears in different ways several times throughout the tune. Short, short, long. 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 At the end of eight beats, we have experienced a phrase. But a phrase which leaves us up in the air, an unresolved or tension-arousing melodic part. We wouldn't feel satisfied if the tune ended there. So we need a related, but a more restful and resolving phrase, something subsequent to this antecedent phrase, which will bring this melody, or this melodic sentence, or this period, to a satisfying final conclusion. Notice that in our Lightly Row example, and in the earlier Mozart 40th example, the motive from which the melody is generated, the first three tones, or, is as much a rhythmic motive as a pitch motive, and possibly more so.
Let's take the motive from Lightly Row. We hear the pitches, bum, 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 either in the original form or in some varied form, four times. But we hear the rhythm, short, short, long, six times through the course of the melody. This demonstrates the importance of duration in melody. Melodies are not just tonal phenomena. They're not just made out of tones or pitches. They are tonal and rhythmic at the same time. Every tone has duration. So rhythm is very much a part of melodic expression. Pitch and rhythm just can't be separated.
Let me try to do that. Let me take the rhythmic aspect out of this series of pitches and challenge you to tell me what the piece is. What is this melody? Have you figured it out? You'll probably get it very simply once you hear the tonal and rhythmic aspects of the melody. Notice how the character and the expressive content, the musical meaning or feelingful effect, is markedly different between something like and
here's another definition of melody. Melody is pitches moving rhythmically through time. Pitches moving rhythmically through time. So melody is also pitches, that is, different sound frequencies flowing through time. In this sense, melody is active. It has a direction. It moves toward a goal. Like music in general, melody reflects the tension and relaxation cycles of all creatures. In breathing, in the cycles of hunger and fulfillment, of activity and rest. Part of the direction of melody we call contour. The motions up and down, the rising and falling shape of a melody as it moves through time towards a goal.
A nice example of a rising and falling arch contour is provided by the little folk tune Sweet Betsy. In fact, just that first phrase is a nice example of a rising and falling arch. But so is the whole melody. We come to the high point and then fall from there to the point of rest.
We can go back to the Beethoven Eighth Symphony, first theme, for a good example of a falling and rising contour.
There, in that first phrase of the first theme, we notice that the melody descends and then it rises again. In fact, we could abbreviate it like this. Falling and rising again. The second phrase of that theme provides us with a rising and falling example of contour, though it's not as wide-ranging. Up to that high point, and then it resolves upward, but the third phrase resolves back down. The second theme from Beethoven's Eighth provides us with a marvelous example of a rising contour. It sweeps us up a full octave.
It's difficult to talk about melody, melodic contour, and so on, without referring to scales and intervals. But we've resisted it, for the most part, up to this point, because these theoretical aspects do not come first. Melody does.
Musical theory, which would include such things as the naming of scales and intervals, is derived from musical practice, and not practice from theory. Melody came first, and scales and the other things that we use to talk about melody resulted from the analysis of existing melodies. But theory also reflects back on practice. It helps us to understand it better, to teach it more effectively, and in general, it influences further practice. We've long had melodies that sound like this. Or like this. And when you analyze these melodies, they reveal what we call the pentatonic scale, which is a scale built upon five steps. You can get this scale by playing the black keys on a piano. One, two, three, four, five. Five different tones.
We have many melodies that can be analyzed in terms of a seven-tone scale, particularly with five whole and two half steps per octave. We call this a diatonic scale.
A scale of seven steps, built upon five whole steps and two half steps.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, and then back to the octave, one or eight.
An octave is comprised of eight scale steps.
We can define a half step in this system as the distance from one key on a piano keyboard to the next closest, be it a white key or a black key. The distance to the next closest key. And similarly, we can define a whole step as two half steps, so that these two half steps span a whole step. And this is another whole step. Melodies, like the one that follow, are exemplary of the seven-tone scale system, which is so common in our culture.
And we have melodies that use all 12 half-steps of the octave. And when we analyze those, they give us what we call the chromatic scale.
Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, and then back to the octave.
Chromatic scales, diatonic scales, pentatonic scales. While these are quite common in Western civilization, there are lots of other scale systems, particularly in some non-Western cultures, where intervals even smaller than the half-step are used. Listen to this Indian sitar. On the other hand, this gamelan music from Java uses intervals just slightly larger than whole steps, making it sound maybe a little out of tune to Western ears. And that brings us to intervals. An interval is the distance between two pitches, not necessarily adjacent to each other. And different sized intervals can give melodies different emotional effects and meanings.
Often, wide intervals will give tension-rousing or unsettled feelings, while the narrower intervals or adjacent scale steps may suggest more settling or flowing effects. For example, again, the first theme from Beethoven's Eighth begins with rapidly flowing, narrow intervals, but ends with a transition to a wider, leaping, more unsettled melodic feeling. And indeed, that unsettled feeling is meant to lead us onto something new. The second theme may give us a nice feeling of upward movement, as it climbs the scale rather smoothly to its climax an octave above where it began. So scales and intervals help us understand melody as a linear flow of sound through time. And it's important to realize that when we hear a melody, we're hearing a sequence of related tones, not individual tones.
And once a melody has been created, it can be used as a theme in a larger composition. The composer can then play with the theme, developing it, exploring it, transforming it in some way.
The developmental possibilities are virtually limitless. And it is these techniques that composers use in developing extended compositions, such as sonatas and symphonies. When melodies are used in this way, they're called themes.
A theme is the principal idea or one of the principal ideas in a composition. When themes are repeated, they provide a powerful, unifying element. At the same time, as they are varied and changed, they can provide interest and novelty.
Let's demonstrate some of these aforementioned modes of thematic or melodic development, and in the process, try to notice not only the various techniques, but also the different expressive values, feelings, meanings that go along with them. Rhythmic and pitch changes and pitch additions are used in developing melodies or themes. There we noticed some slow to fast, sudden changes, as well as some of the effects of gradually speeding up from slow to fast. So we have a different feeling about it as it is developed in this sense. Or it might be developed another way, as Mozart does here. Still the same basic theme, but with some rhythmic changes and additional pitches.
These same techniques of repeating and developing melodies are used by all sorts of musicians, from symphony composers to jazz improvisers. Variation is something that goes on in all kinds of music. In jazz, for instance, players often start with a melody and then improvise on it, spinning off new improvisations from one moment to the next, and different variations from one performance to another. In this program, we've heard many examples of melody. We've talked about motive, period, and phrase. We've talked about pitches, intervals, and scales. We've talked about repetition, variation, and fragmentation. And we keep coming back to this idea that a melody is a meaningful statement. Not just a series of tones, but a series of tones that make sense in any instrument, in any culture.
This program on melody, the third of 12 in the series Basic Concepts of Music, was written by James Tucker and produced by Ralph Johnson, with technical production by Marv Nunn. Faculty hosts were Professor Paul Hack of the University of Minnesota and Professor J. Peter Burkholder of Indiana University. Studio pianist, Vincent Fu. Project director and script editor, Linda Clauder. This audio print course was developed by the University of Wisconsin Extension through Wisconsin Public Radio, the Independent Study Program, and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with funds from the Annenberg CPB Project, providing opportunities for higher education through telecommunications.
And you are listening to WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves, and we are very happy to be able to bring you on the fourth Saturday of the month, two episodes of the Basic Concepts in Music series. And it is a music appreciation course, and it's produced by the Annenberg CPB grant, and brings you all kinds of great music educators, prominent music artists, and many music examples from a wide range of periods and styles. Hope that you're enjoying that. We're going to take a little break for some important messages, and we'll be right back with part two on the fourth Saturday Forum, Music Appreciation.
Do you ever wonder about such things as dreams, astrology, reincarnation, or other supernatural topics? Well, if you do, be sure to listen to Metaphysically Speaking every third Saturday of the month at 10 a.m. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, hoping you can join me for each edition of Metaphysically Speaking, only on WHFR.FM, the station that is truly making waves.
Do you already have prior experience and knowledge that could translate into part of a degree? Would you like to save time and money? How about earning a degree in a shorter amount of time? If so, the college-level examination program at Henry Ford Community College can help you. CLEP credit helps you to fulfill graduation requirements by allowing you to move past introductory coursework and onto more challenging courses. CLEP exams are offered in 30 subjects, covering courses in literature, science and math, foreign languages, history and social sciences, as well as business. So if you'd like to fast-track your college education with your prior knowledge, call 313-317-6608 to schedule an exam or find out more about course equivalencies. That's 313-317-6608.
Don't be stupid with your skin. It's the only skin you're in. Know what's good and bad to do. Find the right and wrong for you. It's time you learn what it's about. 'Cause indoor tanning is out. UV lamps from a tanning bed, they can turn your skin beet red. Wrinkles come from the UV light, and age spots make you a frightful sight. With UV light, it gets worse. Skin cancer is a wicked curse. Don't be the one that's tan and dead. Use your brain, use your head. It's time you learn what it's about. 'Cause indoor tanning is out. A message from the American Academy of Dermatology.
Basic Concepts of Music, an audio print series funded by the Annenberg CPB Project. Your host for this program on the concepts of harmony is Professor David Myers of Georgia State University.
Harmony. It's a magical and mysterious force in music, a force not readily understood. Harmony gives depth to a melody. Harmony moves music forward through time towards a goal. Harmony colors music in subtle and complex ways. I'm David Myers, and in this program, we'll explore some of the mysteries of harmony. We'll talk, for example, about tonic and dominant chords, and we'll learn about chord progressions. We'll consider why Renaissance harmony sounds different from the harmony of, say, Handel's Messiah, and we'll find out whether the piece we're hearing now, Pachelbel's Canon in D, we'll find out whether this piece has anything in common with the blues. Harmony is a major element in music of the Western world. Tuning into harmony makes us more aware listeners. Let's begin with a simple melody. That's Amazing Grace, a wonderful old hymn tune, a beautiful melody that doesn't really lack anything. But to make a point, I'm going to add something in my own voice. We often call that singing in harmony, or harmonizing, adding a second part to the melody, the lead part. But harmony is also more than that. Here's what I mean. We've really changed the music, haven't we? Perhaps we could say it sounds fuller or deeper. I've added chords to the melody, and this is the harmony I want to focus on in this program, the harmony of chords and how one chord relates to another. What is a chord? Here's one, and here's another one. and a chord progression is simply a series of chords. One chord leads logically to the next. In music, there are three basic chords. The first one is called the tonic. That's usually the chord you start out from and the one you end up with. We begin with the tonic, travel through these chords, and return home to the tonic. Another basic chord is called the dominant. It's an active chord. The tonic is the stable chord, the dominant is the active. Here's another chord progression. Where is it going? You want the next chord, don't you? That's because this is the dominant chord, the active one. It wants to go towards the tonic. There's the tonic. That resolves the tension. Dominant to tonic harmony. It's satisfying, and it's strong. Our third basic chord is in between. It's more active than the tonic, but it's not as strong as the dominant. It's called the subdominant. You may recognize the sound of this one. It's often used for the amen at the conclusion of a hymn, like this. Subdominant, tonic. Let's listen to that progression one more time. The subdominant chord to the tonic chord. Amen. With these three chords, tonic, dominant, and subdominant, we can harmonize a lot of melodies. Now here's a different style of music in a different key. Here, this is the tonic, this is the subdominant, and this chord is the dominant.
Lord, I wonder what's got the motto. I'm trying over time. It seems like the hours, everything has changed, but I hold in my hand. Lord, I'm trying to make you understand. Lord, you know what?
The blues. Here's those three chords again. Tonic, subdominant, dominant.
Now you know why.
This is the tonic, where it begins and ends. Change to subdominant. Back to the tonic. To the dominant. Subdominant. And the tonic. And get ready to repeat. Tonic. Tonic, tonic, subdominant, subdominant, tonic, tonic, dominant, subdominant, tonic, tonic.
I say more. I tell you this time, baby, I ain't gonna tell you no more. The next time I tell you, I have to I let you go, but I hold on my hand. Lord, I'm trying to make her understand. Lord, you know everybody, they tell me. Somebody on hoodoo, the hoodoo man.
That's the blues. a harmonic progression that goes round and round in an eternal cycle of tonic, subdominant, and dominant chords. Now, what does the blues we have just heard have in common with the Pachelbel canon we heard at the beginning of this program? Let's listen to the harmony of the canon. Here's where the cycle begins. Tonic, dominant, another chord, subdominant, tonic, subdominant, dominant, tonic, and it begins again. And again, tonic. Dominant, another chord, subdominant, dominant. So the Pachelbel canon, like the blues, repeats a harmonic progression over and over. It uses a few more chords than the blues, but it's the same basic structure. Most harmony is freer and more complex than the basic cycles of the blues and the Pachelbel canon, but all harmonic progressions have a shape and a direction. Johann Sebastian Bach was a master of harmony. At the culmination of his Passacaglia and Fugue, after 12 minutes of music, Bach uses harmony to shape a dramatic ending. He sets up the strong expectation that dominant will lead to tonic. Dominant, tonic, dominant, tonic, dominant, tonic, dominant. Uh-oh, an unexpected chord. Stop the music, says Bach. Stand on one foot, harmonically speaking. Then take it on home to that expected tonic. An effective ending. In music, a stopping point is called a cadence, and what it sounded like Bach was going to do on that first cadence was to end on the tonic or the dominant. Tonic, dominant, tonic, dominant, tonic, dominant, and then the unexpected. And following that dramatic cadence, Bach heightens the interest even more by switching from minor to major. Here's the minor key we were in. And now the sun comes out and all's right with the world. We end in a major key. Here's another example of minor and major harmony from the music of Chopin. We start out in minor, change it to major, and we change the mood completely. I think Chopin had it right the first time. I like it better in minor. Let's summarize so far. The most important chords are tonic, place of rest, beginning and end. Dominant, strong and active, yearning for the tonic. Subdominant, not as strong as the dominant, but still active. There are many other chords, but these are the basic ones. And this basic structure, tonic, subdominant, dominant, helps define the key of a piece of music. Every time dominant moves to tonic, the key is established. A logical sequence of chords makes a harmonic progression, and a progression can be major or minor. Like individuals in a social order, the chords in a harmonic progression work together toward a common goal. Each plays a unique role, and each contributes to a satisfying purpose. I want to expand on these basic ideas now by talking about other kinds of harmony that one can hear in today's environment of music from many eras and many places. The kind of harmony we just discussed developed during a specific period in Western history, the 18th century. But what about harmony in music before the 18th century? What about harmonic principles in 20th century music? Is there harmony in music of other cultures? Let's begin with some 20th century music by Ravel, Pavane for a Dead Princess. Listen to this chord, or these, or this. Now what happens if I take Ravel's melody and harmonize it with those basic 18th century chords we talked about earlier? But that seems to take away all the bittersweet melancholy of Ravel's harmony. After all, this is supposed to be a dance for a dead princess. Listen to the anguish of Ravel's chords. A few different notes in the chords can make a big difference. Jazz musicians often picked up on those 20th century chords they heard in classical composers like Ravel and Debussy. That's Count Basie's Little Darlin'. The style doesn't sound like Ravel, but these chords do. Again, if I harmonize the melody with simple chords, it changes the impact of this piece. It doesn't have that same bite and pungency of the 20th century chords. Suppose you're the composer, Igor Stravinsky. One spring day, you have a mystical vision of pagan Russia and the primal forces of spring. Wise elders, seated in a circle, watch a young virgin dance herself to death. They sacrifice her to propitiate the god of spring. As a composer, you see dramatic possibilities to fashion this vision into a daring 20th century ballet score. You first create a primitive sounding melody. Good. That sounds like an Eastern European folk tune. Let's see now how to harmonize it. That's kind of minor sounding. Not bad. Or how about this? That's not bad either. Kind of major sounding. But not daring enough. It should sound contemporary. 20th century. I've got it. Put those two different harmonizations together and play them both at the same time. Great. Primitive and modern at the same time. Should be a big hit. All it needs is a daring orchestration. Well, that's a brief introduction to modern harmony. There are other modern techniques, and each technique has its own logic. As we already heard in the examples by Stravinsky and Ravel and Count Basie, modern harmony is mostly a variant of traditional harmony with a modern twist. A listener in our times has access to music from other times and other places. So besides the kinds of music heard so far, you can easily hear something like this, a music, a harmony of purity and spirituality. We're listening to O Magnum Mysterium by Victoria. That's one of the most ethereal sounds I know, unaccompanied choral music of the Renaissance. Above all, this is vocal music. Each voice in this elegant texture has its independence, its own integrity. Earlier in this program, we looked for a logical sequence of chords in traditional harmony, a chord progression. In Renaissance music, those soaring, flowing, individual vocal lines rule the music, and the resulting chords are secondary. It's not so much the chords that go somewhere, it's the melodies. Here's what the chords, just the chords, sound like. Notice that the chords do make a short progression when the music comes to a cadence. Here's a cadence. It's a stopping point. Or another one. Earlier in this program, we heard chords which progressed with a clear purpose and sequence. The harmonic system regulating Renaissance music obviously has rules about individual chords, but the sequence of the chords is generated by melodic lines. Except at cadences, the flowing line of each voice and the interaction of the voices governs the chord sequence. That's the beauty of Renaissance music. I've talked about harmony in traditional European music and modern music and Renaissance music. But what about non-Western music? Does it have any harmony? In most non-Western music, the answer is no, it doesn't. But there are some interesting systems of harmony here and there, such as choral singing in the islands of Polynesia or fiddle playing on the Black Sea coast. I think the most interesting of these is found in what may be the oldest surviving orchestra tradition in the world, gagaku, from the Imperial Japanese court. You can clearly hear harmony in the mouth organ. It's not the traditional European harmony I talked about earlier in this program. It's gagaku harmony. Here's one chord. And here's another chord. Japanese court music has 10 kinds of chords like this. Each one is appropriate for only one melodic situation. Like Western harmony, it's not something you can learn in a half hour, but it is a complete system with its own internal rules and aesthetics. Now that we've touched on traditional, modern, Renaissance, and world music, I'd like to end this program by returning to our first subject. What is harmony? For thousands of years, the human race found melody to be a perfect expression of musical thought. So music can be a melody alone, beautiful and solitary. Or, as in Renaissance music, several melodies can work together, giving and taking, combining to create but not emphasize harmony. Most often, music we hear has chords that form a harmonic progression. That harmony can be subtle or it can be overpowering, but always, it colors the music in magical and mysterious ways.
This program on harmony in the series Basic Concepts of Music was written by Dr. Carl Signell and produced by Ralph Johnson, with technical production by Marv Nunn. The faculty host was Professor David Myers of Georgia State University. Project director and script editor, Linda Clauter. This audio print course was developed by the University of Wisconsin Extension through Wisconsin Public Radio, the Independent Study Program, and the University of Wisconsin, Madison, with funds from the Annenberg CPB Project, providing opportunities for higher education through telecommunications.
And this is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. Very happy to bring that series to you on the fourth Saturday of the month. That is part of the WHFR Forum series. Hope you enjoyed that. Lots of good information. And lots of good learning, and not too painful. I'm Lynn. I'm sitting in for Bill this morning and bringing you light from the underground. It's 1 week to go, not even 1 week to go, so I thought I'd bring you a little bit of Halloween start to Light from the Underground show.